Okay, I think we left off on the personnel and our commitment to them and problems in organizing the personnel. And I'd like to move into activities. Organizing your activities, organizing your schedules, and then into the training environment and try and cover all that in an hour and a half, and we won't do it justice. But we'll get it opened up. Then Andrews will take this session tomorrow on the broad base and tactics and really illuminate this whole particular area. And I think it will probably be one of the highlight sessions because Alan has a rather unique ministry down there, and God has really used him at that grassroots level and just how to really get that base expanded. And so I'm looking forward to that session myself. He has presented it to some of the other staff guys, but he hasn't presented it to his boss yet, so it'll be new for me too. So we'll get into that. Okay, on activities, let me make some general comments first. Okay, activities are a means to an end, not an end in themselves. Activities are a means to an end. Now, if there is a, if there's one thing I think that we do consistently and violate consistently, that is that we have a lot of good activities, excellent activities, but we're not looking at what our objective is. And there are activities that we've heard other men have used and they've worked, and we've used them ourselves over the years, and they're good activities, but they're not so good if they don't relate directly to your objective. So in getting your activities in perspective, you've always got to keep your objective out there in front of you. What is my objective for this semester? Another thing with activities, and I'm sure you all do this, but all activities, no matter what it is, provides a training opportunity for someone, whether it's just a fun and games night or rally or whatever it is. And you ought to be thinking, training, I'm going to get into this whole thing on training environment a little later on, but think training in all of your activities. Somebody needs to do something, and therefore you can train in that situation. So no matter what the activity is, there is training. But it's not training unless you're willing to sit down afterwards and evaluate. So when you have an activity, you talk about it afterwards. How did it go? Somebody missed an assignment? Could we have done it better? That's training. If you have an activity and you delegate a rally to a man and he does a good job and you don't say anything to him, okay, so he's put on a good rally, but you didn't help him any. You didn't tell him how he could have done it better. You didn't compliment him on how he did it and just encourage him. And that's not training, necessarily. So training has to have, the activities have to have that evaluation in them to provide the training. You want to have some privileged activities, and I'm sure you do this. But do you find yourself constantly in the rut that every activity you have is open to the world? You know, we're going to have a ski trip, and I've caught myself many times. Well, we decide we'll have a little ski trip, or we'll have a little retreat or something, and, well, who we invite? Let's just keep the core bunch together. Let's just do this. Well, no, boy, you know, there's this guy over here and this guy over here. And boy, before you know it, you got the whole busload, you know, in fact, two busloads going. And that's great, and, you know, we're bringing some people in, but boy, don't forget that your main ministry is to that core bunch, those three or four or half a dozen or a dozen key people. And the tendency is to just get the whole thing steamrolling so fast that we're not developing relationships. And taking those privilege activities, a little retreat, you know, how many of you ever stop to just take the guys and go to a motel, check into the motel Saturday afternoon, stay over there till Sunday? Swim, sauna, do the whole thing, dinner, share the word, pray, just with those few guys. Boy, we don't take that time, and we ought to be doing it. That kind of thing, a privileged activity. These are general comments. Again, a good activity, but it could be the wrong time. The wrong timing. And make sure that you've got your objective in front of you all the time. Keep referring to your semester objectives. Okay, now what I'm going to do is give you an idea, and again, gang, this is not meant to be confining. It is not the end all. It's just some of my ideas thrown together, some things that we've collected through experience over the years, and you can take it or leave it, whatever you like to do. Some specific activities for the various teams. And just one little comment there. The teams, the area team, the ministry team, and the core team are continually mixing all the time. You know, you don't just kind of isolate them all over here. You will at periods of time. But they're, generally speaking, in the area, they're continually mixing. And there isn't that great a distinction. And it shouldn't be a big thing to be on the core team or to be on the ministry team or to be on the area team. It should be a very natural thing. It should be a thing where the guy is mature enough to handle it. He's on that team. It's no big deal. You know, if a guy's striving to get on the core team, he ought not to be there. Okay. Let's see. The area team. Here are some activities that are fairly common for the area team. Rallies, conferences, work projects, that is some work projects, some recreation, a grab bag. I don't know whether you use that term. That's just kind of a fun and games night. We open up the house on Friday night for popcorn, television, games, the whole bit. No big deal. Might not even do anything particularly super spiritual, except just fellowship together and group Bible studies. Then the ministry team, you'll see the distinction in activities here. The ministry team people, of course, are involved in all area team functions. They're praying for the navigators. And one of the things I like to see is a regular prayer meeting in there for the navigators worldwide. When I first went to get some training with White House, we used to every Saturday morning come over and pray. We took all the we had a card file on all the navigators, where they were, pictures, the whole bit. And we'd have 30, 40 people in that room. We'd pass out these, about 3 or 4 cards to each person. And we'd pray for the navigators around the world. And boy, it was stimulating, particularly for the young birds. Very stimulating to pray for the navigators. 2x2 evangelism training, weekly study with standards. That's for the ministry team. A work day, special retreats, recreation with the core team. Again, kind of an exclusive type thing, and then man-to-man. A lot of the ministry team will be met with man-to-man by the core team. And then the core team, the differences there is that they'll get man-to-man with the rep, or they should be getting man-to-man with the rep, planning with the rep, workshops, they're leading workshops, emceeing rallies, organizing, running, conference responsibilities, that kind of thing. So these just give you a few ideas, and I'm sure you're doing all of these different things in your areas. Okay, how do you arrive at your activities? How do you establish what activities you want to have and so on? And here's some guidelines, some general thoughts that I have that might be helpful for you. I don't want to say that too many times, but reread your objective. You always start your planning with your objective. You don't start with good activities and then decide to kind of get an objective out of that, but reread your semester objective. Boy, have that objective always in front of you. It's a thing that you continually refer to. Print it and put it on your desk or carve it into the desk, whatever you need to do. Great. Thank you. Okay. List your possible activities. You start, and of course if you're doing this and you've got a team of guys, that'll make it even that much, you'll have a greater resource to draw on. but you list your activities, the possible weekly activities, the possible monthly activities, and you start by teams. In other words, you take the area team, you put that up on the blackboard, and you say, okay, now what are some activities that we'd want to have for our area team? What are some activities we want to have for the ministry team? What are activities we want to have for the core team? And think about that in terms of the semester. What are the activities that we want to emphasize this semester with this team? The thing that I find in visiting around is the guys are usually about 1 month ahead in their planning. And it's kind of a, you know, hip pocket type operation. Rather than taking a look down the road at your at where you're headed and in planning your activities to get you there. And you should be able to do it. After you've been in your contact point for a little bit, you should be able to look down the road 1 year and plan your activities pretty well down the road. Right down the road. In terms of retreats, special deals, so on and so forth. In case I don't mention it later on, please plan into your regular activities a go-home weekend, almost once a month. You will make great mini brownie points with parents if you plan and insist, at least from the ministry team and the core team, that they go home about once a month. I mean, after all, mom and dad are footing the bill. And, you know, the ministry isn't going to lose momentum if they go home for 1 weekend. And I think I've got this later on, but in case I fail to mention it, the girls don't like to do quite as many activities as the men. You know, they do have their hair to do. It takes them a little longer to do things. And when you have them cooking, baking the cookies for the Friday night rally, getting up and preparing the coffee and the breakfast for the Saturday morning prayer hour, and everything else that we heap upon those dear girls, and then expect them to go out 3 nights a week in evangelism and lead Bible studies the other 2 nights, it's a little much. And let us be realistic. You know, boy, good night. Plan some free time in there for the girls. And also plan at least once a month for you to get together just with the key girls to sit down. You, single man or married man, doesn't make any difference. For you to go over and just rap with the girls. Boy, why do you think Sandy has a wives meeting? Boy, he's figured that one out. He learns all kinds of things about the ministry and about where things are. Plus, he really encourages and motivates and stimulates the girls. And you probably already do that, so I don't need to mention. Decide collectively on the activities, at least at the core team level. In other words, the more consensus that you can get, the easier it will be to get the activities underway. I can't remember the specific activity, but I think it was a retreat or something that I had. Boy, I was just in my mind, I was going to have this dumb retreat. You know, I had it. But I had planned it. So then when I presented it to the guys, I didn't get that unanimous feeling. And boy, I tried to sell that thing and I decided, well, look, we're going to do it anyways. Whether you guys want to or not, we're going to do this thing. And boy, about a month before, we had to call it off. Just, you know, the guys were following me, but they decided that this was one they weren't going to follow me on. You know, I mean, they were there. They would have gone. But they just weren't enthusiastic and they weren't behind the thing. And it wasn't a problem of them not knowing about spiritual leadership or anything else. It was just that they were tired, plain tired. And they didn't want that particular activity at that time. So, and they know better, by the way. Now, this will really help you if you can really consider this, and that is to review the student's schedule. And to really be realistic in the number of activities that you're involving them with. See, do you think of the student going to school for 40 hours a week? And let's suppose, I think most people can make it on 40 hours a week, depending on the course load, but most people, if they put 40 hours a week in, that is in their class and their studies, a total of 40 hours, they'll probably make it, unless they're in some high-powered thing. Well, it's very easy to plan for the student to go to school from 8 until 5. Jim Proud went to the University of University of Wisconsin at Whitewater, and he decided he'd go to school from 8 to 5. He was going there as a contact point, but also to finish his schooling. And so he'd go from 8 to 5, he'd carry his briefcase and the books for the day that he needed, and every time there was a break, he'd go over to the library, study. Over to the library, study. Straight A student that year, led people to Christ, had a going ministry. So we can help our students, but we've got to be realistic in it. Now, Jim is a unique case. If we're asking students to put that much, you know, they're putting that much time in, then we can't ask them to put in 7 nights a week, can we? I mean, it's not realistic to ask people to put 7 nights a week. I mean, even guys do need a night off, a night when they don't have to go home and they're so tired that they're, and that's the night we give them to do their Bible study. You know, they've been out running. You go do your Bible study on that night. Well, man, no wonder the guys get tired and demotivated. Andrews called me last year in, I guess it was about this time of the year, just about this time of the year. He said, boy, I can't figure it out, Jeff. He said, boy, people are sick. There's murmuring, grumbling, and I just can't figure it out. What we need is, boy, I got to get some kind of an, you know, big deal to get this thing. I said, no, wait a minute, Alan. Let's just review the year. Did you have a fall conference? Yeah. Did the gang get cranked up and really do it? Yeah, they did a great job. What'd you do at Thanksgiving? Well, had a conference Thanksgiving. Well, that's great. What'd you do over Christmas? Well, we had a little retreat. We let them go home for Christmas Day and day after. A little retreat. Oh, what'd you do at semester break? Oh, we had another retreat. I said, well, Alan, if I were one of your guys, I'd want to go lie down and be sick too. See, we have to use our head in planning activities. It's okay for those of us that are full-time in this work because we have learned to pace ourselves. And I know you guys hit it too in your stretch. But let's be realistic. You know, and we're hitting the ministry, and I'm not trying to sound, throw out the anchor and drag your heels, but we're hitting this ministry as if everything in the world depended upon our activities. And I don't think that's letting God be God, to quote Lauren's little phrase. You know, and it's not going to hurt to send them home for the Christmas vacation, or Harvey and I have a little go-around on that. Harv doesn't like to let the guys in, maybe it's unique to the military, but he doesn't like to let the guys go home at Christmas time because they're going to get in sin. Well, I say, man, you know, how are we going to get these guys to grow up and get rid of this paternalistic atmosphere if we don't let them go home and live life where it's supposed to be lived, out there? And we're going to keep them in a Navigator incubator for 5 or 6 years? I don't think so. Okay. Review the student's schedule. His hours involved, his classes, how much study he needs, whether the guy has to work a job or not. And then the Navigator activities that you involve him in. And then ask yourself this question. How many hours do you commit your people to, commit your people to weekly? And then total the hours for each team. Now, I guarantee if you do that little exercise, that you will be pretty amazed at the number of hours that we're asking our people to put out. Review his schedule, his classes, his study, his job, his Navigator activities, and in his free time, and just take a realistic look at how much time we're really demanding of people. And ask yourself, is that really realistic? Okay, let's move on here. Just a little summary. I'm going to say it again. Refer continually to your objectives. Structure your first and second semester to complement each other. Structure your first and second semester to complement each other. Now, you're always going to have an ongoing thrust of evangelism. But when you realistically look at the year, you want to have a heavy, heavy thrust in the first semester and in a lot of conservation and training in the second semester. And so that's what I mean. You complement the kinds of activities. You'd have a lot of Andrew dinners and evangelistic type deals first semester. Then the second semester, you'll go to more a building type if you've got the fruit from the first semester. Some have to keep on hitting it because they don't get that thing off the ground in the first semester. Well, these are all... This is a good question. E, I always ask, does this activity contribute to my objective? Does this activity contribute to my objective? Seek a reasonable balance in the number of activities. We've covered a lot of this. The ministry team, how many nights did they be involved? How about a go-home weekend? What about examination time? It's amazing what we do to people. You know, we finish the semester strong. Good night, the guy needs time to study. You've been hitting it all semester long, and at least he's got to, you know, take the 2 weeks before exam time to cram for what he's been giving you all, you know, what he's missed. Let's use our heads. The ministry isn't going to fall apart, and God isn't going to stop working if we just give the guys time to study. I mean, we do have to honor the guys in this particular area. And maybe I'm strong on this stuff because I've made all these mistakes. I mean, I have literally run guys into the ground and had all kinds of problems from it. So, same thing with the core team. How many nights a week do you want them involved? What about weekends? Now, I make this little note here. Man-to-man time with the rep is mandatory. If they're on your core team, then they ought to be getting regular man-to-man time with you. You owe that to them. Girls, they need time off. They need additional time to get ready for activities. You cannot ask them to bake cookies for the rally on Friday night and to get up at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning and get breakfast ready, that kind of thing. They also have some social needs. And I think Jack very neatly covered that last night. And we don't need to say a whole lot more to that. Other than that, I really go for group dating. I kind of groove on that. I think it's a good deal. And I had a guy at the University of Wisconsin. And boy, he's a single guy. And he really, he had those girls. They literally loved the guys on that team. You know, just as sisters in Christ, because those guys would at least once a month do something special with the girls. You know, about six or eight guys, they'd invite six or eight girls and go roller skating or some deal like that. And boy, just took that little special interest. And we can really, you know, the dating thing will resolve itself if we use our head on it. Okay, in planning your own... personal activities, plan your family time first, and then plan your Bible study at prime time. When you're sitting down and getting organized for the year, make sure that you plan in your family time first and your Bible study at prime time, and then begin to plan the other activities that you want to get into.
Personal Bible study.
Uh-huh. Personal Bible study. Yeah, and then work everything out from there. When are you going to get that personal Bible study? And that ought to be prime quality time. This will all clear up in just a few minutes as we... I just realized something here. Okay. Yes, prep. Uh-huh. Not so much your discussion. That'll kind of work out as a regular... I mean, you'll work that in. But the thing that I find is if I don't plan my family time in and plan when I'm going to get that Bible study, that they get crowded out.
The idea is to plan the most important things in first, right?
That's the way I feel, yeah.
Why then do we plan the area to get it
before the course? That was not necessarily in order of priority. Sorry. Right, these are just some factors to consider and just to stimulate your thinking on. I think I'll pull it together in a few minutes here.
Well, that's a group dating thing. Last night Jack made a comment, and maybe you can clarify that. Perhaps the core team is committed to not dating. Now, was that just an illustration, or was he suggesting that as a possible... possibility for a core team, or do you know the background of that statement?
Okay, well, I think Jack is very strong on the core team, or and I shouldn't say very strong, but in certain cases where a guy comes on, or the people that are on the core team commit themselves to not dating for a period of time, but not for an unlimited period of time. Now, I don't hold that conviction. I believe that every case is individual. And if a guy comes to me and says, hey, I'd like to date this gal, and I think it's a good deal, and there's no problems involved, then I personally have the liberty to tell the guy. Now, that's my personal conviction. And
it's also dependent on the age and maturity of the court. Like disciple makers who are still in school.
Yeah, see, that's why I like it to be on an individual thing. Rather than lay this... And now I'm the first to admit that the guys in the military ministry seem to have a different thing. So I'm not taking issue with it. I'm just telling you how I handle the thing. I'll tell you what I did not do at Wisconsin, which caused more problems than anything that I ever did. And that was, I didn't communicate anything. And so what happened was, I gathered all these eunuchs around me, and then they began to propagate this whole thing right down to the root system. And you know all those illustrations Jack uses? Every time he gets onto that message, you know where I feel like getting up and leaving, or standing up and saying, please, not me again. See, I think that people on the core team, I don't know why we ask people on the core team not to date, personally. I mean, outside of they're pretty busy and maybe they don't have the time to date. But the people on the core team are better able to date. They should be more mature and spiritually capable of handling it. It just doesn't make sense. I think handle it on an individual basis, personally. That's the way I do it. Guy comes to me and he says, hey, I think she's cute and I don't have any big deal. I'd just like to go, you know, date her. And what do you think? Great, man, why don't you do it? Here's $10, go do it. They don't have any money anyway, so, you know. That kind of an attitude, and now you're going to run into some problems. You're going to get burned on it. But I think, as Jack said, we're losing a lot of sharp gals because of the other thing. Now, I'm not advocating dating to recruit gals. You know, that's not what I'm saying. But we miss the social needs. Well, we got guys, they don't know how to behave, they don't know how to talk to girls, they get tongue-tied, the whole bit. And the girls, too. You know, boy, you know, girls on one side, guys on the other at every rally and that kind of thing. Oh, good night. I get tired of that. So you figure it out. You know, you get your own conviction on it. That's mine. Are most of you guys, who is not full-time in the ministry here? Just so I get an idea. Okay. So some of this will not apply to you, but you can... what I've tried to do here is come up with a schedule for a full-time guy. And you'll have to moderate it or... You know, I get a lot of guys that are full-time in the ministry, and they still feel the pressure. They say, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to do Bible study. I don't have enough time to do development, and so on and so forth. And then I look at their ministries, and they have organized themselves out of the ministry. They con themselves into thinking that they need at least a half a day a week or a day a week to do administrative details like writing a prayer letter and so on and so forth. And I say, nuts. That is not true. I know it because I've been out there. And that's, you know, I say you don't need all that. It's not all that complicated. So what I've tried to do here is, this is what I do with my contact points and my area reps when I go around and visit. I try and give them an idea of how to handle their schedule. Monday through Friday, I'm going to get you 20 hours of Bible study. Would you be happy with 20 hours of Bible study a week? You bet. I'd be very happy with 20 hours of Bible study a week. Okay, there you are. Go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. Study till 12 noon. That'll give you 20 hours. Now, you have to get up before then and have your quiet time. But so does the guy who works for IBM or any other corporation and who carries on a ministry. So do all of our laymen. So let's not get lazy. Let's get up and hit that book at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, 20 hours a week, if you took 10 hours on your chapter analysis or whatever it is you're hitting and took 10 hours to develop in some other area... doctrine or whatever you're predicting, that's a lot of time. And that's Monday through Friday. So, very easy. The afternoons. Now, I'm talking about an area rep who maybe is working with four or five men on the core team. And here's what I suggest they do in the afternoons. Monday and Tuesday, man-to-man with one guy and evangelism. And evangelism, or in evangelism. See, every man-to-man session does not need to be you sitting down and imparting some great truth to that particular individual. In fact, I probably got more help from White House when I was with him when we went out and did evangelism together. And so now I can pick off four guys in those four afternoons. That could be my core team, right? Now, I'm assuming that they're students and they're available for me to get at on those particular afternoons, and in my case, they were. Wednesday I take as my family day, family afternoon and evening. And you'll see that in just a minute. Now, you can do man-to-man with a guy. If you get over on that campus at 1:30 or 2 o'clock, and that'll give you an hour and a half or 2 hours at lunch to talk to your wife, and that's pretty adequate. You know, you don't get that with the average corporation. So you can get over there by 2 o'clock. You can have an hour of man-to-man time with a guy. That's 3 o'clock. You can do 2 hours of evangelism. Or you can do 2 hours of follow-up. Or you can do 2 hours of both. You can nip in and meet with the guys that those core team people are leading to Christ. See, how can you help the core team guy if you don't evaluate the men that he's leading to Christ and where they are? Well, what I used to do is I have a list. That's why I kept that evaluation sheet up to date with the room number. So I take that page when I'm going over to that particular dormitory to meet with that man. I'd meet with that man, then I'd cut out and I go meet with some of his men. Just no appointments, just drop in. Hey, how you doing? Boy, you know, because you've met him at a rally or you've been introduced to him, that kind of thing. And you can cover 6-8 guys in an afternoon. You can witness to their roommates. Boy, you keep your soul fresh and happy because you're out there in it and right where it's at. Then when you sit down on Friday afternoon or Saturday or Sunday, whenever it is you have your core team meeting, and you sit down with those guys, you can say, hey, you know, I talked to old John. Did you know he's having a problem with that particular thing? And boy, the core, how did you find that out? I didn't know that. Well, that's your job. Your job is to help evaluate those men so you can help those core team guys evaluate them. And you got to be out there. You got to be out where it's at. Okay?
When doing that evangelism, like, do you feel a personal responsibility to follow up those that you lead to Christ, or do you ask the guys what you do? That seems like eventually you get more.
Oh, yeah. You'd get overrun with. No, that's why I'd take a core team guy with me, or I'd go pick up one of the disciples underneath that core team guy and go do it with him. See, and you can also have him take you. You don't need to do it. Just go check him out, whether he's, you know, whether the core team guy is training that bird in evangelism or not. Go take that. And you don't need to do anything spectacular. See, when you just go into the guy's room and say, hey, let's go down the room. There's a guy down here we can go talk to. And go down and look for an open door. Wheel in there with the disciple right under your arm, witness to him, and boy, you can turn people on, and no, you don't need to follow it all up, but you need to be out there. See, if the guys see you all over that campus, well, I like Leroy's instruction to Dan, I think, when you went on your first contact, go over there and do it 8 hours a day. Was that what he basically told you? I know Leroy exaggerates or gives you a kind of a, but he told Dan, go over there and do it. And I really believe that a lot of our guys are not out there hitting it in evangelism and creating that atmosphere and that fire. And you don't need to do it all yourself, but you need to be out there. Okay, evenings, just to give you an idea. Evangelism, Monday night, if you like to do your, I like to have a regular night of evangelism, and my guys never became Monday night evangelists. I can guarantee you that. We use Monday night to train people in evangelism. And or any, doesn't particularly have to be a Monday night, but we use that as a training night, and they were invited to come on evangelism, and they had to commit themselves to come for the duration of the semester. We never just made that a very easy thing. When the guys wanted to just get a young Christian involved in witnessing, they'd take him out in the afternoon. But Monday nights was an exclusive thing given to training, polishing the skills, really working on it, getting out there and hitting it. Okay, evangelistic Bible studies on Tuesday night. Again, my family night, Wednesday. Core study on Thursday, and maybe a rally or something on Friday. Work project Saturday morning. and recreation Saturday afternoon if and when you needed it, and it still leaves you all day Sunday to your family and half a day on Saturday. And gang, you can accomplish a lot of ministry if you just even follow that, and that's a bare...
Did you make any quick suggestions for a guy that is working at a secular job?
Yeah. Make sure you get plenty of time with your wife and family. Again, the ministry is not going to, you know, suffer. Your family can suffer. And so a guy who's working a job needs to really catch the balance. And George and I, just Sanchez and I had some time this afternoon, and he's convinced that, and I'm convinced as we survey the NAV staff, that we are workaholics. I mean, we are a committed, dedicated gang. We really are. And praise God for that. But also, sometimes we lose complete perspective. And so a guy who's working a job needs to make sure that he is maintaining the right relationship at home, that he's getting good time in his Bible study, which is really a fight, and that he's got a little bit of ministry going on. And you'll have to work it out with your ID, Bo. Well, I think, first of all, a guy needs the job description from his RD as to whether the RD wants him to work himself out of a job. I mean, if when I started off, and I came into the thing a little backwards, but I just tell, if I'm going to put a guy on a contact point, and it's an official contact point, I tell him, as soon as you work yourself out of a job, great, you know, raise your support, that's great. You know, and so, and I like to see the guy have about $400. If he's a married guy, he needs about $400 coming in a month before he can begin to really cut back, and somewhere around there. And I have no suggestions as to how you do that, except that you use the contacts that you've got. Relatives, friends, home church, that kind of thing. And if you don't have a home church, you young guys right now that have come into the NAVs recently, if you don't have a home church, boy, make sure you're establishing one right where you are. Get into a church. Join the church. Participate in the church. Don't expect anything from the church. But boy, they'll be there when you need them. They'll be there when you need them. My home church, boy, I thank God for my home church up in Canada. Whew. Tell you, prayer warriors, finances, tremendous. And mainly because I got involved. Man, I am their missionary. They really...
Pete?
Well, they've got all day Sunday. They've got most of Saturday. I'm not going to have a work project every Saturday morning. Now I'm going to have recreation every Saturday. Of course, there'll be conferences and that kind of thing. But so they've got all that time. They've got Wednesday night, you know. And these activities every night are not necessary for every member of every team. Okay. And this is just a rough. All I'm trying to do is give you an idea. Think and plan. Go ahead. Who had a question? Okay.
When do you normally have your core team planning sessions?
Okay. I used to have mine on the Friday afternoon, and drop that one man to man. That was when I had the three guys. That, but most of the time in a regular area ministry, that's just the average size. I'm not sure that you need a weekly. You know, you might want to go to every other week and take a Saturday morning and do your planning and prayer, that kind of thing. NAV prayer and so on would be in Saturday morning. I like those Saturday morning breakfasts, you know, have the gang over, pray, that kind of thing. But intersperse it. Don't get into a rut on those weekend activities where the gang feels every week and saying, well, here we go again, here we go again. But use those weekends and those activities and the lack of activities to motivate. You know, you can motivate people by saying, hey, why don't we take this weekend and everybody go to their rooms, read the Bible, and pray. We just do it for the whole weekend. Rather than have a weekend of evangelism or a weekend working on this work project, let's just all go read the Bible and pray. Okay, and then we'll come together Sunday afternoon, we'll share what God has done. We have prayer. We don't do that very often. Prayer nights through the night. Go ahead, Dan.
Bob, I've got a situation in which all the fellows on my core team are working fellows. And so conflict for me to, you know, like one each night for the week, where then I will foul up some of my nights and some of their nights. So that doesn't work out too well. And I just never really been able to get a good balance in this thing.
How did you handle that, Al? Yeah, amen. Did you hear that? Don't put your core team meeting with your Bible study. One or the other suffers. And you've got to see his ministry, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Because you got the key to training that man is on camp. It's not over there in the bay. Because you don't know what's going on over here. And so you're waiting to meet with that guy that you're taking over there. So the key is you've got to take that man out there on the campus with you. And then take him off the campus and cover him.
Paul, would you have a comment?
Another thing that I do is early morning breakfast and working in with his schedule. That's not the time on the campus, but that's the personal time for him. And then I can go out with him, but in my case, it would be a date another night.
Or a lunch.
And so that his family night is the night most of them are young, married couples that don't have children, so they don't have to worry too much about that, or they're so small they go to bed early. So his family. It's the night before, encouraged to get to bed early, and then we get together the next morning. And a lot of guys have an hour-long lunch period, and if you take the bag lunch for both of you, if you're right outside the door, you can spend the whole hour together.
Let me give you one other little caution here, or thing that comes up, and that is, you know, the guys, particularly these working guys, and I really empathize with these guys, having been there. He's working a job 40 hours a week. He's got a family or married. He's out there in the ministry. He's got that Bible study to crank out. And then we lay on some man-to-man project. Well, be careful in your man-to-man project that it isn't the straw that breaks the camel's back. Make it, you know, if you want to cover a character trait, you might take a whole month to cover the thing and do it in very small parts, so that he doesn't have another humongous Bible study to go home and prepare for you. He's already trying to get that chapter analysis out, and then you say, well, I want you to study this particular thing, and so he, and you know, being sensitive and wanting to do everything wholeheartedly, he tries to get another 4 or 5 hours in on that particular thing, and it just kills the guy. But you've got to, and the other caution is to go to the other extreme and have no real content in your man-to-man except just to kind of be there and praying with the guy, and that's great. We need to do that. But periodically, at least once a month, you ought to be covering something specific that you're really concretely helping that guy with. A character trait or some area like that. Okay, there was a comment here.
I have a question. I feel like I've been beaten to death with the man-to-man in terms of my own. I didn't have much time in my own schedule. The question I have is, is it the man, seven men, and they all pretty much have the same needs, why not take that group and share it with the content of men rather than having the same thing with seven women?
Yeah. Right, I would agree with that. There are some things that you can do better in a group than you can do individually, and that where they're really personality or character things, where you've got to really get in there, and you don't want to do that in a group. You have to minister to the man individually, and again, you've got to isolate the thing, and it might not be that you're going to every man-to-man appointment, you're going to sit down and cover that. Alan, you had a comment.
The only thing I remember, I've been teaching a very white
good point.
Maybe it'd be better just to have fun and develop a relationship.
Good point. Okay, here's 4 weeks running. This is what my man-to-man might look like. 1 week, it might be recreation. Go play handball with them. Okay, and I like to do that, and I used to do that quite, or paddleball. I'm getting too old for handball. Some recreation. Then, let's say, for sake of better terminology, a Bible study, real specific content. Okay? That's the next week. Then the next week we might go just do evangelism. Okay? And then the next week we might just go visit his ministry. So, you're right. We want to have variety in that and keep that thing fluid and so on, but we also want to make sure that we're covering specific things. But the important thing about the man-to-man is the relationship. And that's what you're getting at. The thing we want to do there is ensure that every guy that we are ministering to feels like he has a spiritual relationship with us. Not a business relationship or an organizational relationship, but a spiritual relationship with us. And that's hard to do. Well, we got to work at that. Because we are so objective-centered, and we know what we want to produce, that many, many times we miss the point in developing those deep relationships. And that takes time. You don't do that casually. Okay, let me just go on to one other area, and then we'll just open it wide up for questions. And it's the thing I call training environment, and probably what it does is it summarizes a little bit about what we've been talking about for the whole afternoon, or for the whole 2 days, really. The training environment. And I think this is the most important thing in turning on a campus ministry. It's that atmosphere, that environment, that really will help you to turn on your ministry. It's not just those individual, isolated activities. Okay, a little definition of what I think a training environment is. It's an area, that is a geographic area, where conditions are so influenced as to produce the best atmosphere for imparting discipline and instruction designed to bring about character development and ministry proficiency. It's the right atmosphere. That's the key to it. The right atmosphere to do that which we want to do. And we can create that atmosphere. We have control over that. And just kind of a dumb little statement, but it's the right atmosphere for training. For instance, the Army does not put men through basic training at Disneyland. That is not the right atmosphere. Right? Simple, but makes the point. And you don't need to copy that next statement down, but let me just read it to you. The basic training can and should be intensified in order to ensure a man's survival and functioning in the team over the long haul. Basic training, once imparted, needs only periodic refreshing in order to be maintained. The recruit is then able to go on to more specialized training according to ability. Okay, let's take a look at what I think is... We can come back on that, sorry. Let's take a look at this particular passage here. And this is what I call the first navigator area. It's Acts 2, 41 through 47. I love the passage, and I think it'll help you with some specific things that you can do to create that kind of a gung-ho atmosphere that we want to see in our areas. First of all, in verse 41, Acts 2, verse 41. So those who received his word were baptized, and there were added that day about 3,000 souls. Actually, it should be verse 40. Back up one verse. And he testified with, and he testified with many other words and exhorted them, saying, save yourselves from this crooked generation. And then there were 3,000 people that came forward. Now, aggressive evangelism. That's the first thing in developing the kind of atmosphere that we want, the right kind of training, the right kind of training environment. Aggressive evangelism. And you'll note here that it is Peter who is leading out in aggressive evangelism. Now, he could have stayed back and taken an administrative position in the church, but he was the one who was out front, leading. And that's really important, that you and I... Now, we might not do the same, you know, total number of hours, because we do have other responsibilities that we are involved in, but we have to be out there, gang, regularly, in aggressive evangelism. And boy, I need that. And you need it. And the gang needs to see you out there ducking those bullets just like they do. Secondly, we see here in verse 42 that there's some commitment by the converts. So those who received his word were baptized, and there were added that day about 3,000 souls, and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers. Commitment. We see some people who have been faced with a challenge who are willing to commit themselves. There has to be commitment. It cannot be a wishy-washy fellowship. There's got to be commitment and dedication. Well, the thing that I'm trying to get at there is that there has to be bite. It's that thing of inviting the guy onto the ministry team. He's got to make a commitment at that. It's more than just kind of being in the bunch and just kind of floating with the thing, but it's beginning to cost him something. There's commitment. Like these people, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. I mean, there is an actual giving of themselves to the apostles for training. That's what that is. That's what the next four statements are. So there's a commitment to this whole thing of training. They devoted themselves to what? They devoted themselves to training. That's what it says. So there's got to be commitment. We've got to get people beginning to commit themselves to us. I don't know whether that helps. And maybe we can cover that again in just a minute. They're committing themselves to instruction or training. Then look at verse 43. Faith being demonstrated. And fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done through the apostles. And how were wonders and signs done? Well, they were done by faith. Who was demonstrating the faith? Who was demonstrating the faith? The apostles, the leadership. All. And many wonders and signs were done. Okay? By faith. How are you communicating faith to the gang in your area? Faith has to be demonstrated in that area. The gang has got to see things happening. People being led to Christ. Prayer being answered for specific needs, finances and safety and all of these different things. And it's got to be demonstrated. It has to be there. It has to be an exciting thing. And they have to see it. What are you believing God for in your area? Does the gang know what you're believing God for? Are they seeing God answer your prayers and their prayers? Faith being demonstrated. Verse 44. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And I think that's just love. There wasn't any selfishness. And to create the kind of environment that we are looking for, there needs to be that kind of an attitude. We can't be holding out on each other. Verse 45, beautiful verse on lordship. And they sold their possessions and goods and distributed them to all as any had need. Now, I'd say that's lordship. They took it all and they dumped it. And they distributed it as any had need. That's what I call lordship. And that's got to be present in an area. There has to be people who are really committed to the lordship of Jesus Christ. And it'll become visible as your group begins to build and you keep preaching on these things. And verse 46, something I call purposeful fellowship. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they partook of food and with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. They had a purposeful fellowship. And I just use that word in there to make sure that it's just not kind of the wishy-washy. But these people had a purpose in why they were fellowshipping together. They were worshiping God. And not that I'm not anti just having the gang over to relax. I'm not saying that. But we do know of situations where it has become so relaxed that it's like a wet noodle, you know, and there's nothing there. And then finally, reproduction. And I'd say if there's one thing that will produce the kind of atmosphere, the kind of environment we're looking for, that is this thing called selection. Where we have some standards and we select man. And you can go to that Luke 14, 25 through 33 passage and you know what it is. And if you don't, you should. Luke 14:25 is that he has a multitude following him. And he turned and he said to the multitude, "You cannot be my disciple." He said that once. "You cannot be my disciple." He said it twice. "You cannot be my disciple." He said it three times. And Jesus had a pretty high standard for his team. And there was selection in there. And it's not, you know, we're just not a big fellowship. And you guys know that. But I think some of us have a little fear of being too exclusive. You know, we want to be inclusive and love people. And that's true. We do. But we also have a place for that. And that's called the big area team. The atmosphere and the environment is produced in the ministry team and the core team. And there has to be selection. There has to be standards. Ministry in the core. Yeah. Yeah, the area team, it's their choice. They're involved where they want, how they want, you know, when they want. It's a very loose type thing. Of course, we're trying to recruit them and draw them in, and we're working on that. But okay, questions? Any questions? Go ahead.
Let's say, you want to be the answer to the set. And what I've experienced sometimes is that the courtroom commits itself. And they turn around and preach that sermon to people in the area and they aren't really hearing it.
Yeah, amen. Well, you really have to come down hard on your core team and on your ministry team that these are only standards and things that you are asking them to commit themselves to, and that you do not want this. And another thing is, we do not preach this from the platform. We preach lordship from the platform, but we do not preach this training and this commitment and that kind of thing, that atmosphere. I don't think we ought to preach it from the platform. Because why? It becomes the norm. And it's not the norm. We are only asking certain people that we want that kind of involvement with at that particular time. That's why we need to go individually, or we round up the 10 or 15 guys that we've had our eyes on, and we invite them over to the house, and we say, now look guys, we've had our eyes on you for quite a while, and we noticed that you're growing and continuing on, and here's what we got in mind. We're forming this little team, and we wanted you to be part of it. Here's the standards, and I'll be contacting each individually throughout the week and to see whether you'd like to get in on this kind of a deal. But I don't think we should preach that kind of stuff on the platform, necessarily.
Isn't that where Jesus preached that message?
Well, oh, green. You follow up a good workshop, don't you?
He didn't preach it. He didn't preach it.
I buy that. Also, the reason that I don't want to preach training from the platform, I think the basic reason I don't want to is that there are some people that I don't want to invite on that team. And if I preach it from the platform, I'm going to have to live with the results when the guy comes up and he says, I want in. Now, wait a minute. He might not have the gifts or the ability or the emotional stability. Or, you know, there are some guys that we just don't want to have them, because the further we get committed to them, boy, the more we're going to owe to them. And so that's probably the basic reason why I don't preach from the platform. And because it becomes such a, boy, it just opens the door for all kinds of people. There are a couple of comments over here. Go ahead. Yeah. Right. Luke 12:13, where he went up on the mountain and prayed and all night. Yeah. Dan, I'd say the biggest thing I've gotten burned on is preaching training from the platform and then having people come that I don't want to train. I mean, you know, your capacity to train people is limited to your leadership, to the amount of people you got available to train. Other people. And so you want to... Go ahead.
How do you...
Yeah, and it becomes, well, it's a problem in the collegiate ministry too. Yeah. Alan, do you want to speak to that? One thing that might help you to get to more people, you know, you kind of feel, I kind of felt frustrated. Here I've got four or five guys that I'm working with, and my frustration is to get down to those guys underneath. And this is just one way to handle one particular aspect of it. But in your Bible study setup, here's you, and then you've got your core team in a study. Well, I found I was ministering to this team, but every year two or three of these guys would disappear. And I have to bring somebody new on, and I didn't really know the guys that were new. I mean, really know them. So I reserved the right. What I do is each of these guys has got a whole raft of men that they meet with in various stages of growth. So I'd say, okay, now you guys pick one or two of your best men, and we do this by evaluation in our core team meeting. You pick one or two of your best men, and I want the best. And I am going to lead that second level Bible study. So now I not only lead this, but I lead this Bible study because I'm going to have to live with this one. Continue, you know, they're my replacement team. Plus, I want a navigator risen. If they're the best, then I reserve that right. And it's not pulling away from these guys. They get all the man-to-man. They got all the evangelism. They're out there in recreation, and they're living with them and everything else. And it's no big deal. It is no big deal. You study the same thing in both groups, so it's not double preparation for you, so that these guys can still share together, you know, on a man-to-man and just in the course of the week. They're still studying the same chapter and so on, but you lead that study. And boy, that one really helps, because that's the future leadership, and you do want to have some influence on it. Very strong influence. John? Yeah.
You know, if you get together, like we used to be over at Allen's house for maybe two or three hours, and then start with the Bible study and go to this doctrine's hour, where Allen got a chance to see some of the people I was helping.
Yeah.
Say, well, I talked with so and so, and he mentioned this, and they got to see the navigator representative.
Yeah, I think remove the frustration from yourself, because Jesus didn't try and do it. He had 12 that he majored on. And I think, we ought to, at the beginning of the year, really get before God and decide who we're going to major on. And then fellowship and really enjoy these people down here. But the facts are, you are a creature, and not the Creator, and you only have limited capacity. And I know that's a frustrating. The bigger your ministry gets, the more frustrating it gets. Good night. It really gets frustrating. You do that, just you and them. You and the young...
So that then I go see the guy that's meeting with him and say, why are you doing this?
You take the ball back to him.
And then, young Christian, he thinks I love him so much. And he doesn't know what hit him. And so it's just so much fun. You're all foolish not to know it.
Charlie?
We did it. I start in March. I mean, March, April, May. 3 times. At the end of the year, and it does a couple things. One, I just personally recruit him to the master for that particular coming year, and we've got the cream crop there. Maybe the first year we did, we had about 12 or 13. And then we just...
Yeah, and what I did too, and these are just ideas, and again, grab what you want, but we use, of course, the dinner as an excellent opportunity. And so Nan and I had one night a week where we had people, specifically people from the campus over. And so we'd have we'd go to this dormitory one week, and we'd invite all 6 or 8 guys from there, the sharp guys that we were really invite them, or the gals or whatever it was. And so use those meal times and just put that in routinely into your schedule, and so that you know that at least every Tuesday night that the gang from this area is coming and so on, and use those meal times for you to expose your family and yourself to those new people. And it really helps. Boy, that you bring them in like that, and keep it small, 6, 8, that's the tops that you'd want, because then it gets a little too hairy for that kind of fellowship. What you're trying to do is get to know them and let them get to know you. Okay, go ahead, Bo. Uh-huh. You bet. I've got, in fact, as soon as we get back, we're having our first couple study. It's a new one that we're starting. And one guy is a very young disciple. The other guy's still in follow-up. In fact, Ben Long went over a little while back to help these guys. They're over in Milwaukee. They're going to drive down to Chicago every other week. And he went over to have a little deal in the home and a Bible study, and they got all their friends gathered and everything. They're all sitting around drinking beer, you know, Ben's preaching the word. They're real young Christians. But what I try to do is I try to pick off a guy who I really, you know, and I think after a number of years of experience, you begin to sense, and God gives you that feel for the guy who's going to, you know, who you can really invest your life in and make a contribution. And I try and have somebody that I'm following up and somebody that I'm discipling all the time. And it really is, it's a necessity for my soul, you know, to be able to do that.
When Jim Downing came through a division, I think, our last staff conference, division staff conference, he mentioned something about we have a tendency to train, you know, transients in the collegiate ministry, military ministry too, and not go after, say, some of the permanent part of professors and stuff. What do you do?
I have no plan specifically, you know, other than to pray and to get over there and visit with the faculty and make yourself. It depends on the campus too, because there are some that are a little anti-religious groups, so you want to maintain that, you know, just keep underground. And I think just where God blesses. Let's see. One of the guys asked me the other day. Denny Mitchell. He came over and he said they've got, eight profs in one department that are all Christians, and they meet together every other week, and he's in on that deal. And so I think just pray that God would give you the opportunity to minister to staff. One of the best things, if you want to get, you know, is to find out what church those profs are going to and get over there and get in there and mix in that particular group. And if you want to, I mean, if you want a specific plan of how to do it, that's where you'd start. You start with a Christian contact and jump off of him into the other departments and the other men. But I have no particular plan, but that's a good thought. But it depends on the job description your RD has given you. If he says, I want you to do the collegiate ministry and hit that and learn that for this year, and then he gives you the liberty to go after couples and so on, then do it. Amen.
When do you write the prayer letter and send the evaluation headquarters and this or that, or, you know, do all that ministry stuff?
Well, how much, let me ask that. How much time do you, you can't talk. No area reps can talk. Okay? Area reps got to, how do you guys feel frustrated with the amount of administrative work that you're doing? Yeah, okay, let's speak to that. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah.
Okay, what kind of administrative work do you have to do?
Well, it seems like, the prayer letter would be something, or getting ready for a rally would be another. Calling people, like, to bring things or getting things ready. For instance, our campus, we have a little house of just getting a hold of a room. And I've tried to assign some of these things to the guys, but even some of them, you know, they've gotten more things to do than anyone can do with. Talking to the printer about the prayer letter or about conference brochures, and then there's always something that you see a printer about. Then answering these evaluations, and you know, you get a letter from Glen Erie at least once a week, and one from Sheffield once a week, and one from Buzzard every other week. Then these little things like this just begin to take up time. I think it takes me, I would say, I think between at least half hour a day. That's personal and business.
Okay. I'll hold that one for a minute. I got a comment. Go ahead.
I'd like to add to that one of the most frustrating things for me is the conference preparation. We've had three conferences, and each one our area has had a major responsibility.
Dump it on me. I want to hear that. This is good.
Before we got through it, one of the conferences we were already preparing for next year. That's what it's been for the last 6 months.
Okay, talk it to us. I really want it. Dump all the garbage. Go ahead, go. More? More? Yeah, you got to go outside to get it. Don't try and get it in your home. Especially if you got kids, forget it.
Where do you go?
Library, anywhere you can, man. Just, yeah. And see, you fake yourself out when you say, "Well, if I do that, I won't have all the resources there, anyways." You know, like all the books that I want. We don't use that many books in our Bible studies. You know, you can carry the one or two books and go to the library and hide out. Oh, yeah, amen. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Did you hear that? There's a solution to that. Babies come in. It sounds like, now let me ask this, it sounded like when we started in on this thing that there wasn't one particular administrative detail, but it sounds like individual things. Is that right? Is there one thing that really bugs you? That hey. Well, yeah, right.
It's realistic. I think that stuff has to get done.
Yeah.
We have conferences. We have mail we got to read. We have both, you know, wife and kids. And there's nothing wrong with that.
That's a good deal.
So that stuff got to be done. That's important. We just got to learn how to, you know, not feel guilty when we're doing one thing and then another.
Well, you just put your finger on it. See, that is part of the ministry, gang. To go buy that car, you're going to drive that in the ministry. And to go, you know, do the shopping, that's part of life. You know, good night. We got, let's just think, it's so relaxed. Put it in the schedule and go do it. But don't let it become the thing that constantly interrupts. Put it in there and put it in there and lock it in. And then go do it. But a lot of us use those. You see, when I think, okay, now buying a car, I get that idea of buying a car. And so what do I do? I'm supposed to sit down and do my Bible study, or I'm supposed to be working on a workshop or a seminar. What's the thing that runs through my... Boy, maybe I just ought to run over to so-and-so's and see what they got and so on. So, and that, boy, get it in there and make decisions quick on that kind of stuff too. You know, we're... go ahead, Gary.
Blaming occurrence of the word, you know.
Yeah. Okay, now we're getting into a whole other thing, but I'll give you a very simple thing. There are certain things you do in follow-up in a man's life that are consistent and basic. There are certain things that you do in a man's life to make him a disciple, and there are certain things you do in a man's life to make him a disciple maker that are fairly consistent. You can identify those. And now, you have to do your homework. You ought to have studies, thoughts, books, resources, and everything worked out in all of these areas so that you know. And Gary, the sooner you get your homework done, the easier the ministry will become to you. It'll free you to do all... See, people tell me that this whole idea of having a plan or a syllabus or whatever you want to call it is a very stifling thing. Nuts! It's a freeing thing. I got my homework done. Man, I can go over there and do it out of the hip pocket, as you say. You know why? Because I did my homework. Man, I go and I sit down with a guy. I can immediately evaluate where he is in his Christian life. And if he needs help in scripture memory, I got three or four books that I can recommend, or I got a Bible study for him, or whatever it is. And I've got my homework done, and I'm free. And it's a lark.
I can testify to that, because I got that first, I bought that email to Alan. But one of the most freeing times was, we were walking down the street, and he says, I bet you're tied to your, or frustrated with your conference notes. And that was exactly it. Because in order to help a guy, in one particular area, I had this frantic leaking through 8,000 messages and verses that were written out, scribbled out, rather than something systematic to go to, which I could add to or change as I heard different messages. And that was where it probably began. I had contacted him before, but when that conversation came up, I think from that point on, I was...
The thing I'm saying is, and that's good, thank you, John. The thing I'm saying is, Gary, like, when you sit down, unless you've got some great problem that you're really, that's a psychological problem or an emotional problem, most of the things you're going to do with the man fit into these categories. So if you've got your homework done, I mean, it's just a matter of sitting down. Okay, let's say I'm getting with old John this afternoon, and I've covered the authority and inspiration of the scriptures. I want to get into this particular area. Okay, let's see now, yeah. Okay, I need to get this, or give them this book, or do this with them, have them do this Bible, or whatever. Man, I'm free. 15, 20 minutes of preparation, I can go over the campus.
You get that little preparation done right there, you just get before man to man, or
Oh, yeah. While I'm eating lunch,
Like a certain time during the week where you maybe try and plan through the week and figure those things out.
Yeah, I must be... you do need to take time to plan for those man-to-man times to really make them effective. But the longer you're in it, and the more homework you've got done, the less time you'll have to spend in doing that. Unless you're dealing with an emotional problem or a psychological problem that's taking a lot of counseling and special stuff. I'm talking now about the basics, building these things into a guy's life and that kind of thing. But it depends on you, Gary. Where you are in your ministry, where you are in your own life, and the kind of guys you're meeting with, are they complicated type guys, or are they guys that don't... go ahead, Al.
One thing I've noticed, too, is that you can plan out, especially in the area of the ministry and faith, before the year ever starts, or within the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks of the year, you can plan out what you're going to do at the end of the year. You can state it in your objective. And once you state it,
okay, we've run out of time, and tomorrow Alan will be with us and cover this thing of the broad base and so on, and I think it'll be in Friday.